Bhagavato arahato samma samputasa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma samputasa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. This is the last talk in this summer series of talks. I think the topic is letting go is not rejecting. And I chose this word letting go because letting go, attachment, non-attachment are quite important words in Buddhism, especially the way I've learned it. And the thing with words, if they've been around for a long time, there can be a lot of misunderstandings, misinterpretations. The discovery of truth is something which is obviously beyond language. And the difficulty we often face is we get a set of words and we try to cram our experiences into those words. We try to mold reality into some set of concepts which we can never really be. So truth is something we have to discover, and then the words make sense afterwards. So the words which come and are given are really kind of approximations and efforts for people, efforts to describe something and trying to encourage people to look in a certain way to make that discovery themselves. So the kinds of misunderstandings around letting go is that it means rejecting emotions or rejecting life or having no emotions, or that it is something like cold indifference, non-attachment. You hear that phrase often, non-attachment. And then some people think, well, that means that you see your mother die and you don't blink an eyelash. That's non-attachment, which is another wrong understanding. Sometimes people think that letting go means something like condoning stupidity, condoning immorality, condoning violence. So this, these are the wrong kinds of interpretations I've heard of that word. And so I just wanted to perhaps reflect on that for you, how I see those words, like this word letting go and non-attachment. In an environment like Amaravati, we often speak about the inner world, about understanding our emotions and how to be free within the inner world. And what I often forget to talk about is lifestyle, because I have such a very good lifestyle. I have a very moral lifestyle, I have good friendships, very supportive environment. It's, couldn't ask for anything better, beautiful situation, lovely new temple. So sometimes I forget to mention lifestyle, because obviously most of you don't live here, so you have different lifestyles. Now, Buddhist teaching is always placed in the context of right living. And that's always phrased in the terms of morality and generosity. Buddhism without a proper lifestyle isn't really Buddhism. Buddhism, if people think, you just kind of meditate and look at your mind in some way and don't have a proper lifestyle, then that would be it'd be shortchanging the Buddha. In terms of lifestyle, there's a lot of emphasis on altruism, on commitment, on responsibility, on surrender. In the yoga schools, I suppose it would be called karma yoga. The idea that the way we do live our lives, the way we relate to each other, we are responsible and we have a duty. We have a duty to moral precepts, and we have a duty to each other to behave and act in a civil and decent way. So the emphasis in Buddhism is around non-violence, not killing, about honesty, not stealing, about fidelity in relationships, honesty, not being promiscuous, about speech which is truthful and not destructive or divisive, about a mind which isn't caught up with alcohol and drugs. So that's a given. Those kinds of moral precepts are a given. So if someone says letting go means, well, I'll drink a bottle of Johnny Walker tonight, that's not quite what the Buddha intended, actually. So there's a sort of idea of that if someone is very enlightened or very attained, that somehow that they can do everything immoral. Somehow, you know, maybe I have some kind of insight, therefore the moral precepts don't bind me. But in this form of Buddhism, that would not be true. Everyone has to pay respects to the moral precepts, no matter what their inner attainment is. In the text, there's an interesting, in the disciplinary text that we use, the Vinaya, our moral code, our monastic code, there's a fully attained monk called Venerable Anuruddha. And Venerable Anuruddha does something which is socially inept, and he's criticized. And he said, "You don't do that." Now he's enlightened, but still he makes a faux pas, and he's told about it. So there in Buddhism we talk about the social level and the inner level, and both are very, very important. Also, Buddhism stresses a lot generosity, service, giving, and within that there's a tremendous amount of letting go to be done. Parents, like we just finished the summer camp here. We had about 70 kids and 30 parents, I think, and just to see the kind of love and generosity the parents give their children, and there's a lot of letting go in that, of serving one's family, of seeing family and children as vocation. This is the Western way of talking about karma yoga, work which is God-given in the Western tradition, rather than just some kind of self-seeking situation where one is trying to always gratify oneself. And for me, this has always been profoundly important, because so much of my Buddhist practice has been very introverted, because you need to look at yourself to understand the inner world. But if that introversion becomes selfish, insensitive, self-seeking, then the whole program's lost, I think. So say the kind of Mother Teresa, people like that, I find very inspiring to see someone who really gives themselves to their work, not because they're seeking something for themselves, but because that's their sadhana, that's their practice, that's the way they live. So letting go as in terms of action and speech would be letting go of actions and speech which are coming from greed, from hatred and delusion. So if I want to speak in a way which is harmful to you, then the letting go is not doing that. Restraint. It's not denying that that might exist there. It's just not doing it. Action which is based on harming society, destructive action, I don't do that. It doesn't mean that I don't feel that. I might feel that, but letting go is not pursuing that. Letting go of that kind of selfish, gross selfish desire to hurt, to harm. Harming this body, using this body in a kind of way of just seeking pleasure, or just pushing this body for work. This is quite often what we do with these bodies and minds. We push them or we just seek pleasure out of them. That would also be selfish in some way. It wouldn't be respecting this body, taking care of this body, taking care of this mind, taking care of these emotions. And letting go within that would be some sense of boundaries, some sense of limitations in the world of sense experience. I just got another thing in the kind of social context is the idea that letting go or non-attachment means condoning or not doing anything, being inactive, being passive. That's a classic. You know, so that someone comes in and starts shooting us, we say, "Oh, we'll just let go. Please shoot me. That's fine. I don't mind. I'm equanimous." And they blast away and kill everyone. Which would be stupid, wouldn't it? I'd run. I'd duck at least. I just got a letter, there's a website for the Buddhist temple in St. Petersburg, and perhaps you heard about it. It was built in 1911 and by some of the great Buddhologists in Russia. It was taken over by the communists, and it was used for animal vivisection in Stalin's time. a pretty ghastly kind of thing to do to it. It was given back to the Buryati community in 1990. Buryati community, which are Mongolian, Lamaist, Tibetan Buddhists, and it was given back to them by the government. Well, I just received news that on the 23rd of July, a group of armed men came in and threw all the Buddhists out. Just came in with their rifles, like some kind of security guards. They chucked them all out. Said, get out. And there's a group of people who want to take over the temple and run it as a commercial venture. It's in St. Petersburg. This is the Russian meltdown. Now, does letting go mean, say, oh, fine, please, take my temple. I'm equanimous. Is that what it means? Does that mean that, you know, we just sort of let people do that? Well, no. Now, in Buddhism, there's still social action. There is still social action is necessary. And so these people are doing whatever they can to petition the government and go to the courts, whatever courts are left in Russia. And they've put up this website, and I have written my first letter to the president of Russia, who we don't even know who it is now, which I found very humorous, actually. And I wrote a very indignant letter, but I wasn't indignant. So like socially, I was trying to do what's appropriate, and I don't usually write indignant letters, but I was indignant in some senses. That's wrong. We have to say something about it. We have to do something about that. Okay? But in my heart, I'm still watching how I'm reacting. So if I take the situation now that's going on in St. Petersburg of this temple and all that, and then I just start to churn it, I start to stir it up, I start to be self-righteous, it's wrong, let's bomb St. Petersburg, or, I get into all of that, that's attachment, right? And that's what we mean by the inner attachment. But that, then people hear about that, don't get angry, be compassionate, and so on. People sometimes assume, well, that means being complacent, not doing anything. But it's not a call to passivity. This is a big mistake I think people make. They think that not letting go means being passive, not saying anything, not doing anything when things are wrong, when things are immoral. That's not it. It's saying, be socially responsible, be socially active in whatever way you need to be. Say, when things are immoral, say they're immoral, but always work for the end of suffering in your own heart. I think the Dalai Lama is a great example of that, isn't he? You know, he works very, very hard for the welfare of his community, of his people, for Buddhists, for peace of the whole world. And yet the times I've met him, I've been very impressed with his lack of righteous indignation, anger, vengefulness, all of that. His true compassion. He's not passive, is he? I think he's a good example for all of us. There's that... Is everyone hear me okay in the back? Yeah? Okay. There's the example of that monk that spent 30 years in Tibetan jails. And he just got out. I think there's a book of his. And he apparently goes to the Dalai Lama, His Holiness Dalai Lama, and says, I'm really worried, 30 years in jail, tortured, I'm really worried that I've lost some of my compassion. It's just, I find it mind-boggling, the kind of, the depth of spiritual practice there. Yeah? But he still goes around and he talks about what happened to him in prisons. He's not just being passive. He's advocating in some way for his people, and he's just saying, this is wrong. You don't torture, that's wrong. But in his own heart, he's trying to find peace and cultivate compassion within this very difficult situation. So in Buddhism, we try to differentiate conventional reality, social reality, and that's the reality where we say and act, or we refrain from acting in wrong ways. That's the social or conventional reality. And then there's the inner reality, the ultimate reality, where we have to find our peace. Because on a social level, in England, I mean, you look how the world seems to be melting down right now. We're doing pretty good. So you're not going to get it much better than England. And I'm really grateful for this country, but I can still suffer. I can still feel, greed, hatred, delusion in some ways. So So if we just have a social component to our lives, if we are just socially active, just that, and we don't have an inner understanding, an inner searching, an inner responsibility, say, if we don't have that, then of course we can become very bitter or very sour or very cynical if things don't go the way we hoped they would go. Vice versa, if we're only cultivating the inner world and we're not paying attention to our society, we're not paying attention to our governance, we're not paying attention to what our children are doing, just letting them run wild or whatever, then we're going to feel the consequences of that. We're going to live in a society where the forces of ignorance are going to have maybe more power, had we said something and spoken. So I think this is very important to understand that there is a place for social activism, and there is a place for right speech, right action. Another way of looking at letting go is the way of faith or the way of wisdom. The way of faith, probably we're more familiar in Western traditions, is more from the Christian tradition. The letting go, where I've been contemplating a prayer from a monk who lived in the Algerian desert. I spoke about this before, but he says, into your hands I commend, he's talking about the Lord, and for me the Lord is inner silence. Into your hands I commend my soul. I offer to you with all the love of my heart, for I love you, Lord, and I need to give myself, surrender myself, surrender myself with utmost confidence and freedom, something like that. So there's this idea of surrendering to the Lord. So you find that in Christian traditions, a faith-oriented, or in guru traditions, you put your faith in the guru, Sai Baba, or other gurus that exist in the planet. Buddhism doesn't have that. It tries not to personalize things. But faith is a very, very important element in letting go. In traditional Buddhist countries, where letting go is often talked about is in the ideas of karma. And this is where East and West perceive things differently. And so the classic case for me was I often talk about this, there was a Chinese Thai businessman who worked in northeast Thailand. He started out as a tailor. When the Americans had an airbase up in Ubon in the northeast, when the Americans left, his business went bust, and he then went down to Bangkok, and he got friendly with an older man who was into the gem business, and this older man taught him the gem trade. And he became, the younger man, Siri, became quite fairly wealthy. He was quite successful. The older man one day, after a few years, came to him and said, "Listen, I've got a lot of problems with paying debts. Can you lend me a lot of money? I'll get it back as fast as I can." And for Siri, the older man was like his guru, like his gem guru. So he lent him several million baht. Without any kind of collateral, without any written statement, nothing, just pure trust. And his guru went to the States and was never seen again. I saw Siri about 2 years later. I said, "Are you still mad?" And Siri said, "Well, I was mad for about a year." A year. And then I thought, wait, maybe I owed this guy 2 million baht from a past life. And I let go. Now, Asian people can usually do that. Westerners can't. So there's something about that kind of faith in karma and those kinds of ideas which, say, for me as a Westerner, I feel that more and more somehow, myself. I can only speak about myself. I feel that things arise because of causes. The disturbances that come from without or within, I mean, I can control them to a certain extent. I could try to be mindful. I could try to be careful. I could try to live a, a wholesome life, but still things come at me. And the more I say, well, that's just my karmic situation. This is just the way that life has presented itself to me. The more I can come to that sense of acceptance, not the kind of complacency, but acceptance, the more peace I find with the difficulties of life. And that's an act of faith. That's a kind of act of faith. I've been reading this biography of Ajahn Chah in the mornings, and in that biography, he's sitting in a forest in a mosquito net, and he's meditating. It's the middle of the night, and a pack of jackals sniff him out and start going around his mosquito net, ready to rip him apart. You know, 20 jackals, and he's sitting there, absolutely petrified. Right? Petrified. And so he says, well, it's only fear, it's only death. He said, okay, jackals, if I've done you any harm in a past life, eat me. Rip me apart. Otherwise, leave me alone. Again, as a Westerner, I find that difficult. But what is interesting in the story is the power of his faith. This kind of faith in karma and the goodness of his own life. Say, well, I've lived my life well. I've done the best I can. Okay, let's have it. Whatever you want to bring me life, I'll take it. And this is the same idea in the Christian tradition that let your will be done. You know, so in the Buddhist tradition we say that's let the karma take its course. I'll accept anything that comes. You know? And that kind of faith is very hard to find, I find, in my own culture, which is a very secular culture, which tends to be a pretty cynical culture. That kind of faith of acceptance and letting go of my own willfulness and accepting life as it presents itself and learning from that kind of faith is a part of letting go. And it's, of course, you see that more strongly in faith cultures. Where that kind of faith goes off is, of course, when it is not balanced with wisdom. And so letting go with wisdom really is the way that Buddhism classically talks about letting go. Now, the ideas of attachment or non-attachment come, if I can get into a little theory, come from a word upadana, which is the Pali word for attachment. That's the English translation of upadana. And upadana comes in a series of words, concepts, which begin with the, first of all, that we are sense beings. So we have senses. We feel the world, we see the world, we hear the world, we smell the world, we think the world. And these senses are always being contacted. We're always contacting the world, aren't we? And from this contact, what we have is pleasant and unpleasant. Right? Pleasant and unpleasant are neutral. You hear it's nice and quiet. If you're in the meditation hall, it's pleasant. And then a Boeing 747 comes and almost hits the temple. Maybe it's unpleasant. You're sitting there. You're happy to sit there. The body feels relaxed. After half an hour, it feels pain. Unpleasant. You stand up. You do some walking meditation. It's pleasant. Walk back and forth. Then you get bored with walking meditation. It's unpleasant. And you sit down. Pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant, unpleasant, pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And this is a given in sense consciousness. Sense consciousness is that way. I'm sorry, it can't always be pleasant. And we all know that. But for some reason, we think that it can be always pleasant. We have this sort of superstition that somehow if it's unpleasant, it shouldn't be that way. And that if it's pleasant, it should always be pleasant. This is ignorance. This is not seeing clearly the way things are. And so in this chain of teaching, from the feeling level of life, we have craving. We crave the pleasant and we crave to get rid of the unpleasant, which is most natural. If we feel uncomfortable, we would like to move into comfort. If we're with someone who is obnoxious, we like them to go away. If we're with someone that's loving, we like them to stay. Right? This is most natural. And then you have the word upadana. Then you have the word attachment. So then we attach to this craving to have the pleasant and to get rid of the unpleasant. And from that attachment, the whole sense of self and the world and all the becoming that the mind gets caught up into takes place. That's birth. We call that birth in the kind of psychological sense. So with craving, you have attachment. With attachment, you have the whole nature of suffering. And this is where non-attachment is important to understand in terms of wisdom. So, for instance, say, I'm speaking, let's say I want to get to my room, right? And that's because I have 600 letters to write, and I'm behind because I don't like to write letters. I'm trying to get across the courtyard, and then someone comes up to me and says, "Oh, Bhante, how nice to see you." So the person starts talking with me, and my mind is already with desire. I want to get over there. I want to get to the room. I want to write my letters. You've all had this one, I'm sure. And so the person starts to talk to me, and I'm still attached to wanting to get to the room, aren't I? I'm very much attached to it. I'm kind of, although I'm speaking with this person, you know, I'm kind of trying to shove them off the road, actually. And I'm getting restless, and they're talking, and they haven't been here for 20 years, and then I get rude. And so what's letting go within that? Obviously, letting go is saying, it's okay not to write the letter, isn't it? It's letting go of the desire of what I want. That's simple. Sometimes difficult to do. But it's quite simple. So it's the desire there. It's the desire to have something that I don't have, or the desire to get rid of something that I do have. Get rid of this person, get them out of the way, or get to the place I want to be. So in Buddhism, tanha, or this kind of craving, is terribly important to understand. And the key to Buddhist wisdom, I think, one of the keys, is to not take this whole bit, all this personally, but begin to just see it as the movements of consciousness. Not to take it personally means to look at things objectively, to look at this restlessness I'm feeling with this person, to look at that as a mood of the mind, as a form of irritation or agitation, to be able to look at that. And that sense of objectivity is the beginning of letting go. If I don't take that objective step and I don't just begin to just observe how my mind works, how I react, then of course I'm still caught in the personal. So what I'm thinking is, what do they get out of here? Or I should be nice to them, or I shouldn't be angry, or why don't they just leave me alone, and oh, I have to write those letters. And the mind just buzzes on in what we call personality view, in the me and my mode. But as soon as I can say, this is agitation, that's the beginning of letting go. So letting go is not rejecting there. Letting go is not denial. Letting go is not making a judgment about what one is feeling. It's not saying anything about it. It's just saying, this is a feeling now. This is a feeling of agitation or whatever it might be. That's the beginning of contemplation. That's the beginning of Buddhism, really, in reflective Buddhism, contemplative Buddhism. And if we can't make that step of just observing life in this objective way, then we can't begin to practice the wisdom part. We can be good people. We can live more lives. We can do good works. But the ability to step back and see one's own habits and to see one's own agitations and all of that in a subjective way is paramount, really, to Buddhist wisdom. So then within that, and that's what we try to cultivate. That's what we call mindfulness. Mindfulness of the way things are. Not a judgment, not a rejection, not a statement that it's good or bad, but just suchness of what I'm feeling. Now, from that kind of awareness of suchness, of how life is, there is a chance for edification. There is a chance for insight. And as insight deepens, letting go deepens. So, for instance, I'm talking with this person, and I'm, you know, trying to get across the courtyard, but there's something in me that says, well, why are you suffering, Viradhammo? I'm suffering because I don't shut up, obviously. No, Viradhammo, that's not it. Why are you suffering? It's their fault. No. Why are you suffering? You got to take responsibility yourself, don't you? So I'm suffering because I don't want to be here. I want to be over there. Ah. Then I have a choice. Then I have a choice to perpetuate my agitation is say, it's okay, I let go. I'll accept the life as it is. I accept all. I'm ready for all. And then what happens in that kind of acceptance is you still have the momentum of that agitation. So even though I'm with the person, having attached to this desire, let's say we've been talking for 10 minutes, right? And I haven't been mindful enough. I haven't noticed the arising of this agitation. And I've just talked and gotten more agitated, more kind of boiled up. Well, 10 minutes of agitation, attachment to it, might mean 2 hours of echoes. At least. So the whole thing about Buddhism is be careful, or you're going to have a lot of echoes. And that part of letting go is accepting that too. Sometimes people think this word letting go, you think, well, I'll let go now and everything will just end. I'll be happy. No, you have karma. And that's the karmic momentum of that particular situation, isn't it? Having not been aware of this agitation, having constantly talked but been agitated, having attached to that inadvertently, then having awoken, still I'm going to feel that to a certain extent, less or more. And if that's a habit that I have developed for 46 years, 52 years, 20 years, whatever number of years, if that's a habit I've developed and I've fed that habit, well then it's going to take a bit longer for that thing to cease. It's going to be a wailing banshee, maybe. It's going to be a very loud echo. So it depends. The intensity of the echo, the intensity of that lingeringness of the agitation we might feel depends. Depends on how mindful we've been of these things and how we've been able to let go or how we've gotten caught up and attached. And that's just the way it is. We all of us are conditioned. You know, sometimes people talk about good family lives and some people have bad family lives. Everyone is conditioned. So whatever it is, we're conditioned into attachment just through the nature of living. And the letting go is very much a kind of act of faith in the inner world of allowing things to be as they are. If you feel fear, or you feel agitation, beginning to accept and know this agitation, this feeling as it is, and not adding to it, not feeding it with thought, not pursuing it with speech, not pursuing it with action, just knowing as it is. And when that is known, and the kind of continual act of just surrender, letting go, abandonment, relinquishment, this is the language that we use, then these habits and echoes quiet down, and you have the kind of quiet cave of the mind, the silence of the mind, which isn't being fed by its habitual agitations. And this is where I think the faith element is important, because quite often I found in my own practice when, you know, feelings of agitation are there, then I always want to get rid of it, to be a good guy, you know, to be a nice monk, or to be compassionate. So I can quite often add to things through some kind of idealism, nice idealism, but not really, just know life as it is. Just know this is the feeling as it is, and to accept it with humility and with patience. The key again is around thought. If I know agitation as a mood, as a feeling, and I don't deny its existence, but neither do I feed it with thought. Feeding it with thought means, if this person wasn't here, if this person didn't leave me alone, or I'm a terrible person for feeling agitated, that's wrong thinking, isn't it? But if there's just pure knowing as a mood, as an energy in the mind, then that's letting go right there. That's letting go. And that's all you have to do, really. Just know it as it is. You don't have to analyze it. You don't have to figure out where it came from. You don't have to get rid of it. You don't have to restructure it. You don't have to see whoever you want to see. You just have to be with it. You have to be aware of it. This is where faith is important. This is where patience is important. For me, that faith arises more and more because it works for me. So faith becomes confidence. I've seen in my own mind the kind of sometimes need to to linger on it or to figure it out or to, you know, to do something. But when I can just purely say, well, I'm just going to relax with this feeling of agitation. I'm just going to be with this feeling of annoyance in a pure, accepting and caring way. I think caring is a key word. Kind of allowing this to be there. Then the whole attitude behind that is the attitude of peace. Peaceful coexistence with the way things are. Peace not as a particular kind of experience, but peace as something behind it. Peace as awareness, peace as acceptance, peace as patience of the way things are. This kind of letting go with wisdom, again, you can see if you don't have moral precepts and boundaries, it can kind of go into, well, I'm just going to let go of my anger by punching someone in the face. You know, I'm just letting go. Just too bad. Which is not on, because that's just pursuing it. So very important with this, I think, is that there are boundaries of civility and responsibility. In meditation, what I think one discovers more and more is the subtlety of what letting go is. Because in meditation, when the mind becomes silent, I find the question becomes, well, who's doing this? And what is will? And what is volition? And these very kind of subtle questions come up. And there is this in the silence of the mind, in the more subtle states, it's like even giving up will, giving up the desire to know, giving up the desire to become in more and more subtle ways. And the more one does that, the more the silence of the mind is known. The more what I think religion is about is experience. We call it the unconditioned or the deathless, that mysterious silent background within which all of this is functioning. Now the Buddhist teaching is not about good rebirth. This is a mistake that's often made. People think, well, we're working for a good rebirth. But actually it's about realizing the unconditioned, that which is beyond birth and death, which is why it is a religion. To me, it's not just a philosophy. You know, it's not just a bunch of ideas that we throw around and then feel comfortable with or disagree with. But rather it is a kind of searching in human psyche for that which is very profound. And that searching is done through silent witnessing, silent awareness. Now the practice of letting go then is also has to do with our tendency always to be attached to thought, to ideas, to feelings, to always be distracted. Notice how, you know, if we just sit quietly here for the next half hour, just notice where your mind drifts. It'll drift off into thought, won't it? And into plans about, you know, the next whatever you're going to do, and then the little worries, and then the concerns, and then the resentments. The mind will always tend to drift through habit into the future or the past, or into ideas. Or we'll be very much, we always like to look at things. We like to taste things. We like to experience things. So there's this tendency in life to always go out, either into thought, and that I mean out also, or be amazed by emotions, or disgusted by emotions, or overwhelmed by emotions, or experiences, or ideas. And what we find difficult to do in the religious life is this ability to go back and not go away, to go back to our real home, to go back to that which is still and silent, to return to Nibbana, to return to our real home, to return to the unconditioned. And so letting go is also a kind of understanding that the religious goal is not found in any kind of sense experience. It's not found in thought. It's not found in emotions. It's not found in sights and sounds and ideas. It's found by not going out, coming back home. And this is where the interesting bit of letting go is, where your whole desire system, the craving and what we attach to is always to get something, become something, know something. And the surrender of letting go and abandoning that kind of strategy and just being, just simple being. And that begins with being with the difficult things. It begins with being with fear or agitation, just being with that, being in the center, nowhere to go. And we train in this way, say, in monastic life, our our body language and our the way we use our bowls and the way we put on our robes and the way we relate in the hierarchy. There's a whole lot of emphasis about being present, being in the moment, being here and now with whatever one is feeling. The beauty of that, it's not like a judgmental thing. Buddhism isn't saying that you have to be nice. On the inner level, it's saying, be nice in speech. Come on. try not to hurt each other. But and try not to act in a way which harms other beings. But it's not saying that you have to kind of be happy or be compassionate. It's not saying anything about the inner world. It's just saying, be aware and don't attach. Don't attach. Right? Don't deny. Don't reject. But just know, this is the way it is now. Now in that knowing, that which is skillful and wholesome, we act on and speak on. That which is unskillful and unwholesome, we don't act on. So if I have an impulse to berate you with words because I'm feeling annoyed and so I just want to dump my stuff on you and you're the first target around, the practice of letting go is not speaking, but knowing. The practice of letting go isn't dumping it on you and saying, you twit, you did this and you did that, and walking away, well, I let go. Too bad for you. That's not letting go. Letting go is in the context of right speech and right action. So can we do that? Can I have an impulse? I meet you, you know, and I rolled off the wrong side of my sleeping bag this morning and I'm feeling grumpy and I look at you and the first impulse is to just be rude to you. And letting go is not being rude, but also saying, well, this is what rudeness feels like. That's possible, isn't it? That's possible. That's not rejecting or repression, is it? It's not saying, and it's not even judging yourself as being a bad person for feeling rude or grumpy. It's just grumpiness. That's all. Grumpiness feels this way. And it's not really a problem. But if one has some kind of idealistic notion that to feel grumpy is not Buddhist, you know, that for some Buddhist reason you always have to feel nice, then you're finished. Aren't you? You're done. But if you see that action and speech, okay, you try to govern that, but the inner world will present itself in all kinds of ways, bizarre ways, beautiful ways. And when it's beautiful, then we can act. When it's in line with compassion, when it's in line with generosity, when it's in line with morality, we can act. So there is passivity, activity on the social level. But the inner level, the challenge is to see that the letting go is actually acceptance, letting be, allowing things to be. So you begin to develop this mind which is at peace with all things, with all conditions, or with all beings. One way we look at these forces and energies that we experience as human beings is just beings. You know, there's the grumpy being. Oh, there's old grump. And then there's the excited being. And then there's the depressed being. And there's the hopeful being. And then there's the fantasizing being. They're just like beings coming and going, coming and going. And that which knows, what is that? Does that come and go? That which knows you feel grumpy. And that which knows you feel exalted, that's, you know, it's neither grumpy nor exalted. That's the transcendent. And the more we do that, the more we find our real home, the more we surrender into that, the more deep and profound our letting go is. The ultimate questions, who is knowing, who is doing this, you can't answer. You can only let go into not knowing, into mystery. And this is where I think, you know, we really touch what is religious in Buddhism, that kind of silence. All right, I think I've sort of covered it. Perhaps we could have a break.